Part 18, Chapter 7. It took them 3 hard-working days to clean up the mess and occupy the Lake Victoria mine site. The ore road had gone south to skirt the mountain ranges and turned back north to the mine site itself. In full view, when the overcast parted, to the northwest of the mine site were the Mountains of the Moon. It was a long range that contained at least 7 peaks up to 16,000 feet high. Right here on the equator, in all this heat and humidity, one didn't look for snow and ice, but there it was atop those peaks. There were even glaciers up there. Now and then the towering tops were briefly visible, blazingly white. At one time, this range had been the border between 2 or 3 countries of ancient times. At the period of the Cyclo invasion, or perhaps before, the passes had been mined with nuclear tactical weapons. Needless to say, close as the mountains were to the mine site, the Cyclos never went there. There were several small tribes in the Mountains of the Moon, brown and black and even some whites remaining. They were often starved, despite the teeming forests and savannas full of game below them. And although they could come down now, long tradition kept them from approaching the mine site. An ancient dam, the man maps said, was the Owens Falls Dam, provided power for the mine site, power so plentiful that the Cyclos just left all lights blazing. This was an extensive mine site with 7 underground levels and many branches working for tungsten and cobalt, and it was plentifully supplied with machinery and equipment. But McCardle, in his original raid, had blown up their fuel and ammunition plant and all their dumps. The 4 wounded Cyclos were in a sealed-off section of the dormitory, and breathe gas was pumping into it. McKendrick did not have much hope for them, but he was working on it. The problem of the other bodies they had solved. There was no morgue, and fighting time in this equatorial heat, they had hastily gotten forklifts and ore freighters from the mine site and lofted the Cyclo bodies up through the clouds to the freezing temperatures and crusted ice and snow of a mountain peak once called, the man maps said, Elgon. They were up there now, 97 bodies, around 1,000 pounds each, neatly laid out in the frigid zone.
"We may have no diplomas,"
Dunaldine had said when they finished,
"but it would seem we are pretty good Cyclo undertakers."
And then he looked down from the dizzy altitude to the plains below and added,
"Or is it overtakers?"
The Scots scorned his joke. It was so terrible. They had opened up the road with blade scrapers and righted the basher tank with a crane and driven the vehicles the rest of the way to the mine site. Despite company regulations, they stored the fuel, ammunition, and breathe gas underground, out of the way of attack. They were experts in attacking such dumps. Thor had come back to help them. He said some of the people in the tribes had seen the flashes of the battle, and when they heard the last Cyclos were mopped up, they had named the day the Tyler Battle Day. Thor had flown a hunting party down to the savannah, and they had come back with game, and there had been a lot of feasting and dancing.
"It is sometimes very gratifying, Johnny, to be taken for you, but I had to disappear during the battle. You can't be in 2 places at once."
Thor had spotted the convoy exit from the forest and had discreetly stood by at 200,000 feet to assist if needed. He had full picto-recorder discs of the whole battle and was surprised that nobody wanted to see them. Tired, glad to be out of the rain, they sat around in the huge chairs of the Cyclo Recreation Hall. Johnny was looking through the pilot traffic that still spewed out on the printer. Nothing unusual. He threw it down.
"We better get to work,"
said Johnny. They had been working. What did you call what they'd been doing if not working? Robert the Fox shook his head. Angus looked at his hands, bruised by wielding heavy torches and twisting open oversized locks. Dunaldine just stared and thought of the flight hours ferrying dead Cyclos to the snow. Colonel Ivan whispered back of a bandaged hand to the coordinator, who then told him what Johnny had said, and he looked back, frowning. Hadn't his people been killing every cyclo in sight, and driving trucks, and cleaning a mine site, and doing everything else?
Well, I hate to have to tell you that we aren't here to do all that.
All right, but then what?
We're here to find out why the Chamco brothers committed suicide.
The devil with the Chamcos. They were just cyclos, and they'd tried to kill Johnny. So, Johnny made a speech. He paused now and then to let the coordinator catch up for the Russians present. He told them that they did not know whether or not Cyclo was still there as a functioning planet. He told them about the galactic banknote and all the races listed on it, and he remembered he had one and passed it around. They realized what he was saying. Earth was wide open to counterattack. If the Cyclo planet were still there, it would eventually counterattack with new gas drones. And these other races possibly had means of reaching Earth swiftly. And when they found there were no Cyclo defenses here, they could slaughter the place if they had a mind to. The only way to find out was to rebuild the teleportation shipment rig and get it cracking. But the Cyclos put on the project had attacked him when he questioned them on that subject. They got it. They also got the fact that no other group or organization was working to handle these problems or the defenses of the planet.
Which elects us.
They agreed.
So, Angus, I want you to set up that machine they said you used on me to find that steel splinter. And we're going to set it up and start looking in Cyclo heads. If we find something, and if one of those Cyclos that are still alive can be operated on, we will have somebody we can make rebuild the teleportation rig, and we're in. We can cast picto recorders out and look at Cyclo, and we can look at these other civilizations, and then we'll know where we are. Right now, we're listing in the cloud layers with no direction but down. Without knowing, I think we're dead men.
We have all their mathematics and text on teleportation,
said Angus.
I've seen them, man. I've even held them in my hands.
But you haven't made any sense out of them. I tried for weeks to unravel them. I'm no mathematician, but there's something wrong with those mathematics. They just don't work out. So we need a Cyclo who won't commit suicide if we ask him.
Tell me, Johnny,
said Dr. McKendrick.
I see no evidence of anything in their heads. You can't X-ray or whatever you call it, thoughts.
When I was lying around trying to get back the use of my hand and arm, I got hold of a lot of man books on the subject of the brain. And you know what I found?
They didn't know.
Way back when man had hospitals and lots of surgeons and engineers, clear back, maybe 1,200 years ago, they were experimenting with planting electric capsules in the heads of babies to regulate their behavior, to make them laugh or cry and get hungry just by pressing a button.
What a disgusting experiment,
said Robert the Fox.
They had an idea that they could control the whole population if they put electric capsules in their heads.
The coordinator translated for Colonel Ivan. He said there was a myth that that had been tried, controlling whole populations in Russia, and nobody liked it.
I don't know they ever succeeded, but when I looked this Chamco thing over, I had a clue about it. Why should two hitherto cooperative renegades, happily signed up on good contracts, suddenly attack me when I said certain words? I have reviewed the discs somebody cut. I was pressing them to rebuild the teleportation transshipment rig, and they started to get upset. And then I said these words, "If you will explain to me," and they both went crazy and attacked.
Maybe they were just withholding information. They
committed suicide 2 days later. After that, I asked Kerr whether he had ever heard of Cyclos committing suicide, and he said yes, one did, an engineer on a planet he'd served on. They used an alien race there, and the Cyclo engineer had gone out drinking one night, killed an alien, and then 2 days later, committed suicide. That was the only one he ever heard of. Also,
he added impressively,
they return all corpses to Cyclo. There must be something in them they don't want found.
The group buzzed to each other and got their wits around it.
So, I am guessing that Cyclos, when they are babies, get something put in their heads to protect their technology.
McKendrick and Angus were very interested now.
So that's what we've been doing,
said Robert the Fox. Angus went to their ship to assemble the device. McKendrick went to a dormitory section to set up tables. Dunaldin and Thor went off to the mountain peak to bring down a couple of corpses, Dunaldin calling himself and Thor the Gruesome Twosome. If Johnny was right or Johnny was wrong, they would know more very shortly. The planet was wide open to counterattack. Robert the Fox went out and got an anti-plane battery manned and arranged for 24-hour alert and pilot scrambles. This tiny group, under half a hundred, only four or five pilots, and an anti-plane battery that had already failed to shoot down one of the mine-site attack craft, to defend a whole planet? Ridiculous. But he went through the motions, at least for local defense purposes.